2014-2015 waterfall season. This is a briefing, a public hearing, and a decision. Don Craigie.
Chair Wecker, commissioners, I'm Don Craigie, waterfowl section manager with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And before I get started on my presentation, I wanted to show a brief video showing the status of waterfowl for this year. It's just a six-minute clip that it has a lot of good news in. I think it'll be interesting to folks here, and just to, as a precursor to my presentation.
The 59th Annual Waterfowl Breeding Population and Habitat Assessment Survey is now complete. This video gives a brief overview of habitat conditions and duck population estimates across the survey area for the 2014 season. In May and June 2014, air crews flew across more than 1 million square miles of waterfowl habitat in large segments of the U.S. and Canada. Ground crews surveyed a part of the same area to validate the aerial survey. The air and ground crews worked with other biologists from the Migratory Bird Program to summarize habitat conditions, determine breeding population estimates, and draft annual species reports. Much more detail and insights from the survey crews are available on the flyways.us website. To access the waterfowl status report and other information about waterfowl management across North America, visit the flyways.us website. Overall, habitat conditions were similar to or slightly improved from last year. In general, conditions during the 2014 survey were characterized by a very late spring with average to above average moisture across most of the traditional and eastern survey areas. The 2014 pond estimate for the north central U.S. was 2.6 million. Pond numbers in the U.S. were similar to 2013, and much of this area was rated as good. An exception was the eastern Dakotas, which were rated as fair to poor for a second year in a row. The pond estimate for prairie and parkland Canada was 4.6 million, which was similar to last year's estimate. Most of the Canadian portions of the traditional survey area were rated as good to excellent, with a few areas rated as poor. Overall, population estimates for most species of ducks remain strong for this breeding season. In the traditional survey area, which includes the north central United States, south central and northern Canada, and Alaska, the 2014 duck population estimate was 49.2 million birds, an all-time record high, and an increase of 8% over last year's estimate of 45.6 million. Mallard, Gadwell, Northern Shuffler, Canvasback, and Redhead estimates are all similar to last year's estimates and above the long-term average. Blue Wing and Green Wing Teal estimates were also similar to last year and were still well above their long-term average. The combined Lesser and Greater Scaup estimates are similar to both last year's estimates and the long-term average. American Wigeon estimates are higher than last year and higher than the long-term average. Northern Pintail numbers are similar to last year, but still remain below their long-term average. In the Eastern Survey Area, which includes Maine, the Maritimes, Quebec, and Eastern Ontario, estimates for American Black Ducks, Mallards, Golden Eyes, and Mergansers were all similar to last year's estimates. However, Green-Winged Teal and Ring-Necked Duck populations both show decreases from 2013. In general, most Arctic nesting Canada goose and white-fronted goose populations continue to do well and are stable. Populations of eastern and western tundra swans were similar to last year. Atlantic brant increased following last year's below-average count. Many goose nesting areas experienced a late, cool spring, which typically limits goose population. Average production was expected for most goose populations. Although, below average production was predicted for the Southern James Bay population of Canada geese, and well above average production was forecast for greater snow geese. This year in Alaska, spring was mild, with almost no flooding, which should benefit nesting geese and swans there. While this year's survey results were very favorable, when and where waterfowl will be encountered this fall depends on many factors. Weather, food availability, and water conditions all influence local duck abundance, distribution, behavior, and ultimately, hunter success. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service continues to be very attentive to large-scale changes in the prairie pothole region, extreme weather patterns, increasing agricultural commodity prices, and oil and gas development are impacting millions of acres of upland nesting habitat, as well as prairie wetlands. These pressures present a huge challenge for ducks and other wildlife in this important region. The service also continues to be mindful of large-scale changes in the boreal forest regions of North America, once considered to be stable and undisturbed. This important area for waterfowl breeding continues to be transformed by energy development, logging, and mineral extraction. These large-scale activities may negatively impact duck production in the future. For more information about the population and habitat numbers, to access the trends report, and for much more information about the incredible world of waterfowl management across North America, visit the flyways.us website.
I always enjoy those videos because they do such a good job giving you the overview. They really do.
They do, and there's great footage of different species that we don't always see, and so they're and the habitats too that we're not always familiar with. So, okay. Well, I'd like to get into agenda item 5 now, which are the migratory waterfowl seasons. This is WAC 232-28-436. And just a quick review on how the waterfowl seasons are established and our interaction with the federal government is a little different than our other seasons we deal with in that the Fish and Wildlife Service is the authority for waterfowl seasons through the federal framework. And the federal framework prescribes the earliest opening date and the latest closing date we can have for seasons, as well as the limits, maximum limits and season length, as well as the shooting hours. And we can be more restrictive, but not more liberal than the federal framework. And we can determine our optimal season timing, our split seasons and zones. So approval of migratory bird seasons, we go through the Pacific Flyway Committee. So the Pacific Flyway Study Committee is the technical committee that works with waterfowl regulations, the 11 western states. And we just had our meeting in late July, the 21st to the 25th in Provo, and dealt with several framework changes. But anyway, on the left side there, you see the all the steps that those framework changes have to go through. Ultimately, they're approved by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Service Regulations Committee and then the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service before they're given to state Fish and Wildlife Commissions for action. Things that aren't framework changes, like I mentioned, the season timing, those are a much more straightforward process that we can use to set those. So North American mallard stocks are divided into three different groups, Western, Mid-Continent, and Eastern mallards. And as the video showed, the numbers this year are excellent. We had another record year this year for total ducks in the North American breeding area. So it's in 2012 was another record. So we've had really excellent conditions due to good water conditions in the Canadian prairies. You can see here the increases in total ducks and mallards that were mentioned in the video. And then again, habitat conditions this year are good or better than last year. And on the right there, you can see the conditions this year. Of note here is the up in Alaska, much better conditions there shown by the blue than last year, and those are reflected in the counts for Alaska. And then most of the other areas important to our state are in good condition, except for a small little piece up there in northwest Alberta. And in Washington, we conduct breeding surveys with methods similar to what's done in Canada and Alaska. We have strata defined throughout the state, and we do a helicopter transect through those strata. These are the different strata we survey each year in May. And these are the results of our breeding surveys for total ducks and mallards. And as you can see, in 2014, we had increases in both of those trends for total ducks and mallards. And this year, our count was 13% above 2013 for total ducks and up 17% for mallards. Those are both above the averages since we started this new survey technique in 2010. As I mentioned, western mallards are managed separately from the other stocks, and this shows you the western mallard trends, including Alaska, California, and Oregon. And we're still working to get our surveys included in this in these models. That's Fish and Wildlife Service has committed to do that over the next year. For Alaska, I mentioned the habitat conditions are very good this year, and mallard numbers are up 48% from last year. For the total area for western mallards, up 14% this year from last year. So again, for western mallards, prescription for the based on the western mallard model is for a liberal season this year. And in our game management plan, which is subject of a presentation tomorrow, we have the season timing for duck seasons outlined in that plan. This has been the same the last two versions of the plan. So for each package that we have, liberal, moderate, or restrictive, we have the optimal timing for the seasons. And so for the liberal, we try to locate all of the days as late as possible in the framework, so it's mid-October through late January for eastern and western Washington. Pintail, canvasback, and scop, these were also presented in the videos. Just real quick, on we had slight declines in pintail and canvasback this year, but and a slight increase in scop. So we have independent harvest strategies that are based on models for these species. As far as scoters, we do special winter surveys for scoters in Puget Sound. And last year I presented our harvest strategy for sea duck management that we've established various trigger levels for seasons for scoters. You can see the long-term trend is down for scoters. So several years ago, we established a harvest strategy to try to define when we would close the season, when we'd have a bag limit of 2, 4, and 7. So this year, our counts, the three-year average count, that's how we define the population trigger levels is based on the three-year average, was 53,245. And so that's still within the two-bird bag range, which ranges from 45,000 to 67,500. That's in the harvest strategy. Once we get back to 67,500, we would go back to a four-bird bag. So we had a waterfowl advisory group in meeting in late June, and the group wanted us to consider a midpoint in our range to allow a three-bird bag. So right now we just have a close, 2, 4, and 7. They wanted to have a midpoint in that range to allow a three-point bag. So we're not recommending anything at that time, just to make you aware that that was a recommendation from the Waterfowl Advisory Group. And we prefer to revisit this strategy not every year, but every 3 years or so. So that's what we have been doing. So getting into the specific proposals for this year, in general, things are similar to last year. 107 days, the two-day youth hunt on September 20th, 21st. The remainder of the days are in the general season, 105 days. We do have a a couple of recommended adjustments, and one is on the scop season, in that we anticipated hearing the reports on the habitat that we were going to get out of a restrictive season, but that didn't happen. So the recommended adjustment is to retain the partial season we had last year, which is November 1 through January 25th of the season. The scop season would be closed October 11th through the 31st. That's on pages 1 and 2 of the WAC. And those are noted in your notebook. Also, on the bag limit, so seven ducks to include not more than two hen mallard, two pintail, no change there, two redheads, one canvasback, so this is a change, a recommended adjustment in your notebooks, as well as the three scop limit. So those are all prescribed through federal frameworks, through the modeling and the results we received in late July at the flyway meeting. So those are on page 1 and 2. And then no changes in the sea duck limits, the third bullet there. I did have one floor change, minor change on page 13, and it's regarding the falconry season for ducks. So we have to be consistent on falconry seasons with the gun season. So we need to have that season match the gun season. So it would be October 11th through the 31st. It would be closed for scop and open November 1st through January 25th. As far as the population status for geese, as the video showed, things are generally fairly good for all the goose species. No exception here in eastern Washington. This shows our Canada goose nest trends for the east side. And our three-year average is 2176 for western Canada geese, our locally breeding resident geese. And this is just down 1% from last year, but it's 17% above the long-term average. Another species important in southwest Washington is the dusky Canada goose. And we have fairly restrictive seasons in that area, you know, based on dusky Canada geese. This year we had a large increase in the population breeding in Alaska on the Copper River Delta and Middleton Island. And so the count pushed resulted in a liberalization in the flyway frameworks for dusky Canada geese for Oregon and Washington. And so our frameworks would be increased from 45 last year to 85 this year. And that's based on the flyway management plan for that subspecies. For cackling geese, another subspecies that occurs in southwest Washington, we've had an increasing trend the last couple years for cackling geese. Last year we had a bag limit of three, and with the increase this year in cacklers, we are proposing a bag limit of four. So that would be four cacklers within the general goose bag limit of four. So. Wrangell Island snow geese, we don't have any recent information on this population from the breeding grounds. There haven't been surveys there since 2011, and the Fish and Wildlife Service is working to get those reinstated through the Russian government. But the word we got from the Russian biologists we work with is that this year there was poor production predicted just based on weather patterns that they're able to access from the island. Not really good information from there this year, though. But the winter trends we do monitor in the Skagit area, Skagit and Fraser, and those counts were 69,865 this last January. And you can see there on the lower graph that they've been fairly stable the last 5 years or so for that population. And within our management range of 50 to 70,000 is what we're trying to maintain that population out in this area. As far as Brant, you can see up in the upper left the trend for the Skagit population. And we have a trigger level for that population of it has to be above 6,000, or else we'll have an emergency closure on the season. And we were above that last year at 6486 was the count, which was down somewhat from the year before. And then for Willapa, the count there last year was 2695, which was up 6% from the year before, and a little bit up from the long-term average. So we have fairly restrictive season on Brandt. There's only an 8-day season in the Skagit and 10 days in Willapa, and we're proposing to retain those with the emergency closure for Skagit. One thing we're considering this potentially for next year, it would have to go through the flyway groups, is a new season in Clallam County, in that we've had a fairly large increase in that county of up to 2494 as a 3-year average for Clallam. So it'd be areas around Dungeness, Refuge. So that'll be evaluated before next year. So as far as the goose season proposals in the WAC, most of the season dates and limits are similar to last year. I mentioned proposing higher dusky quotas from 45 to 85. Also higher limits for cackling geese in Southwest Washington, going from 3 to 4. And another recommended adjustment is in goose management area 4 in Eastern Washington. We neglected to include January 1st as a hunt day, so that's a traditional hunt day we wanted to include back in the list of days for that area. And that concludes my presentation. Be glad to answer any questions.
Well, I think you would have heard from Ken Chu if you hadn't included that January 1st. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Don. I want to talk about ducks for a second and make sure I understand how the bag limit works. It's looking mallards, and the limiting factor appears to be 2 hen mallards. So if you have a bag of 7, you actually could have then 7 drakes, and that consist your bag.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not more than 2 hen.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then the subsequent question about mallards, I noticed a really good flyway data and survey results. Was there any consideration of upping the hen from 2 to 3?
We didn't discuss that this year. Those packages are fairly well set through the adaptive harvest management system. But so that wasn't a consideration this year. We pretty much have set packages. And those packages are reviewed every 5 years or so, but that we're currently in that. Yeah.
And finally, the suggested changes, such as the falcon season, the January 1st, those are all included in our document.
The recommended adjustments, except for the falconry scop season, that's a floor change. That's not included in the document. The other ones are.
Okay.
Does that mean that the motion language that you've provided to us includes the floor amendments, or do we have to add that?
It should be added, yeah.
It needs to be added? Yeah. No. Nate? As proposed.
As proposed.
Okay.
As proposed.
Okay, great. Commissioner Mankin.
If David Jennings was here, he'd be asking more questions than I can dig up. But in the interest of following in his footsteps, I'd ask the question, what's the cause of the overall decline in the scoter population?
We've been doing quite a bit of work trying to determine what that is. It's likely to be changes on the breeding grounds in the boreal forest that, for whatever reason, there's lower productivity of that population. But we suspect it might be somewhat harvest-related. That's why we restricted the season several years ago. And based on that action and the increase in the scoter population, it appears that it probably had some effect, that we're seeing an increase since the limits were reduced. So we were getting quite a bit of interest in sea duck hunting. Limits are reduced, and that has declined, and then the population has gone up. So that's somewhat harvest-related, but also we feel that breeding habitat is also a potential problem with the changes going on in the boreal forest in Northwest Territories, where a lot of our birds come from in northern Alberta.
Okay.
something we have very little control over.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. One other question. During the video, there was mention made of South Dakota, where there was apparently a problem with the duck populations. Do they know the cause of that?
I think it was just weather related, that they have, you know, the weather patterns are fairly spotty during the spring, especially in those prairie areas in north central. So I believe it was mostly weather related in that area. Those birds are mostly oriented toward the central flyway that are breed there.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Then I have to ask about Fur Island.
Mm-hmm.
Another subject that we spent lots and lots of time on before. So I remember going to a tour there a few years ago, and there was a lot of concern about the potential for just being swamped with geese, snow geese. And that never materialized, evidently, because this was just a few years ago. How are we doing with keeping the conflict down on Fur Island between the hunters and the residents?
I think that program has been very successful. There was quite a bit of effort through the Fur Island Working Group to help address that. And if you recall, we did make some changes in the season structure to move it later to try to reduce that population somewhat. So several years ago, we had 100,000 snow geese in that area. Now there's only 70,000, which has helped. And then the distribution has changed, too. So there's less pressure on the agricultural areas. And we've also instituted a program with a quality hunt program on some of those areas to help out. So I think the situation is much better than it was 5 years ago or so.
I haven't heard any complaints from Shirley Solomon in years now. any other? Did you have one, Commissioner Schmidt? No. Okay. Excellent job.
Thank you.
Do we have any public input?
Yes.
Okay. Once again, if you were not here, Don, you can. You don't have to sit up at the front. Yes, go ahead.
Don, before you leave, again, I want to thank you. Each year I try to learn from you. And I learned a good lesson this year, and that is to wait until I receive your report before applying for an out-of-state permit. Guess where I applied and was granted an out-of-state non-resident permit?
South Dakota.
You got it.
Oh. Still a lot of pheasants there. Yeah.
Thanks, thank you, Don. Okay, so again, the commission rules are citizens are allowed 3 minutes. When we want you to come forward, sit in front of Mike, and when your time is up, you'll hear the beeping noise. Okay, we have just one person, Ben Welton. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Ben Welton. I'm a lifetime resident of Western Washington. I've been a sea duck hunter since I was 12. Some of you people will hear stories about back in the good old days when the ducks darkened the sky. Well, we have a report here that will tell you that we just about have more ducks now than they did when they started counting. Except for sea ducks, we don't. There's been a drastic reduction in sea ducks and sea duck harvest. You saw this on Don's schedule. That's a 50,000 bird drop in 20 years. We don't know why. We use sea duck counts as predominantly surf scoters. We also have a white wing scoter and a black scoter. They're in big trouble on the Puget Sound region. In the state of Washington in 2010, we harvested 487 white-winged scoters. 2013, we did 193. Black scoters in 2010 were 122. This past year, they were 36. Long-tailed ducks were at 251 in 2010. They're at 242, pretty stable. Now, black scoters, long-tailed ducks, were never here in huge numbers, period. Long-tails, we get an influx out of the Straits of Georgia on occasion, but those aren't the birds that winter in the state of Washington. I hope, or don't know, but there was an article in the PI recently, Marine Birds in Decline.
I saw that.
It's a very good article. Some of the people that contributed to that have been here today. Here's a process here. It's going well back, but this number is not absolutely correct. 230,000 scoters in the 1970s, 53,248 now. For a scoter hunter, it's very difficult to determine between a black scoter and a surf scoter because they're both black. Sometimes you're in inclement weather, it's difficult to tell. What is happening in Puget Sound? This article is about bait fish all the way through. Nobody has an answer of it at this time. In the 1970s, I sat at this commission, 1980s, I sat at this commission, and we had a hell of a problem with salmon. And guess what? Everybody went to work. Profit, non-profit, the tribes, we're in a very bonus year of salmon right now. And I think you're going to have to take a look at Puget Sound. One of the things that bothers me in the EPA, we have approximately 240 insecticides and herbicides that are great for agriculture. They're not worth a damn for bottom fish and eelgrass growth and whatever it takes in the salt water. Overall, that's the black mark in waterfowl management. The rest of it, and I've worked with Don Craigie, I think, since he's had his job, we are really well off compared to the rest of this country. I guided for 15 years. I had clients from 41 states and 7 countries, and they all said, Jesus, you guys really got a nice department out here that cares about the hunters. We do. A highlight here.
Sir, your time elapsed a little while ago, so if you'd just wrap up.
Real quick, I am the current chairman for the Washington Waterfowl Group. I also sit as a director on the Willapaw National Wildlife Refuge, and we're opening 6,000 acres that has never been opened since that refuge has been there on the 20th September, which is a youth hunt, which I will be working on tomorrow morning down there. Overall, waterfowl, I think we're fine. The status of Puget Sound, we are not fine. There's a problem out there, folks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the public hearing on this item. We can move on to decision-making. I think we need a motion to begin our discussion. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate the comments we just received from Mr. Welton as well. I'd like to move then to amend WACT 232-28-436 for the 2014-15 migratory waterfowl seasons and regulations as proposed.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Mankin to amend WAC 232-28-436, 2014 through 15, migratory waterfowl seasons and regulations as proposed. Further discussion? Any comments or questions or discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries.